said Luke. I know it might seem half impossible. Valentine was always such a huge presence, even when he was in hiding. But he really is dead. My son isn't, though, said Jocelyn. You know, I used to take this box out and cry over it every year on his birthday. I dream sometimes of a boy with big green eyes, a boy who was never poisoned with demon blood, a boy who could laugh and love and be human, and that is the boy I wept over, but that boy never existed. Take it out and cry over it, Clary thought. She knew what box her mother meant. A box that was a memorial to a child that had died, though he still lived. The box had contained locks of his baby hair, photographs, and a tiny shoe. The last time Clary had seen it, it had been in her brother's possession. Valentine must have given it to him, though she could never understand why Sebastian had kept it. He was hardly the sentimental sort. "You're going to have to tell the Clave," Luke said. "If it's something that has to do with Sebastian, they'll want to know." Clary felt her stomach go cold. "I wish I didn't have to," Jocelyn said. "I wish I could throw the whole thing in the fire. I hate that this is my fault," she burst out. "And all I've ever wanted was to protect Clary, but the thing that frightens me most for her, for all of us, is someone who wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for me." Jocelyn's voice had gone flat and bitter. "I should have killed him when he was a baby," she said, and leaned back, away from Luke so that Clary saw what was on the surface of the kitchen table. It was the silver box, just as she remembered it. Heavy, with a simple lid, and the initials JC carved into the side. The morning sun sparkled off the new gates in front of the guard. The old ones, Clary guessed, had been destroyed in the battle that had wrecked much of the guard and scorched the trees along the hillside. Past the gate she could see Alicante below. Shimmering water in the canals, the demon towers reaching up to where sunlight made them glitter like mica sparkling in stone. The guard itself had been restored. Fire had not destroyed the stone walls or towers. A wall still ran around it, and the new gates were made of the hard, clear adamas that formed the demon towers. They seemed to have been hand-wrought, their lines curving in to circle around the symbol of the council. Four seas in a square, standing for Council, Covenant, Clave, and Consul. The curvature of each sea held a symbol of one of the branches of Downworlders. A crescent moon for the wolves, a spellbook for the warlocks, an elf arrow for the fair folk, and for the vampires, a star. A star. She hadn't been able to think of anything that symbolized vampires herself. Blood? Fangs? But there was something simple and elegant about the star. It was bright in the darkness, a darkness that would never be illuminated. And it was lonely, the way only things that could never die were lonely. Clary missed Simon with a sharp pain. She was exhausted after a night of little sleep and her emotional resources were low. It didn't help that she felt as if she were the center of 100 hostile stares. There were dozens of shadow hunters milling around the gates, most of them unfamiliar to her. Many were shooting Jocelyn and Luke covert glances. A few were coming up to greet them, while others stood back looking curious. Jocelyn seemed to be keeping her calm with a certain amount of effort. More shadow hunters were coming up the path along the guard hill. With relief, Clary recognized the Lightwoods, Maris in front with Robert beside her, Isabel, Alec, and Jace following. They were wearing white mourning clothes. Maris looked especially somber. Clary couldn't help but notice that she and Robert were walking side by side but apart, not even their hands touching. Jace broke away from the group and moved over toward her. Gazes followed him as he went, though he seemed not to notice. He was famous in a strange sort of way among the Nephilim, Valentine's son, who had not really been his son. Kidnapped by Sebastian, rescued by the Blade of Heaven. Clary knew the story well, as did everyone else close to Jace. But the rumors had grown like coral, adding layers and colors of story. Angel blood. Special powers. Heard that Valentine taught him tricks. Fire in his blood. Not right for Nephilim. She could hear the whispers, even as Jace moved among them. It was a bright winter day, cold but sunny, and the light picked the gold and silver threads out of his hair and made her squint as he came up to her at the gate. "Morning clothes," he said, touching the sleeve of her jacket. "You're wearing them," she pointed out. "I didn't think you had any."
"Armatices," she said.
"Listen, I have to tell you something." He let her draw him aside. Clary described the conversation she had overheard between her mother and Luke about the box. "It's definitely the box I remember. It's the one my mother had when I was growing up, and the one that was in Sebastian's apartment when I was there." Jace raked a hand through the light strands of his hair.
"I thought there was something," he said. "Maris got a message from your mother this morning."
His gaze was inward.
"Sebastian turned Luke's sister," he added.
"He did it on purpose to hurt Luke and hurt your mother through Luke. He hates her. He must have come to Alicante to get Armatice that night we fought at the Burren. He as much as told me he was going to do it, back when we were bound. He said he was going to kidnap a shadow hunter from Alicante, just not which one."
Clary nodded. It was always strange to hear Jace talk about the self he had been, the Jace who had been Sebastian's friend, more than his friend, his ally.
The Jace who had worn her Jace's skin and face, but had been someone else entirely.
"He must have brought the box with him then, left it in her house," Jace added.
"He would have known that your family would find it one day. He would have thought of it as a message or a signature."
"Is that what the Clave thinks?" Clary asked.
"It's what I think," Jace said, focusing on her. "And you know we both can read Sebastian better than they can or ever will. They don't understand him at all."
"Aren't they lucky?"
The sound of a bell echoed through the air and the gates slid open. Clary and Jace joined the Lightwoods, Luke, and Jocelyn in the tide of shadowhunters pouring through. They passed through the gardens outside the fortress, up a set of stairs, then through another set of doors into a long corridor that ended at the council chamber. Gia Penhallow, in consul robe, stood at the entrance to the chamber as shadowhunter after shadowhunter came through. It was built like an amphitheater, a half-circle of tiered benches facing a rectangular raised dais in the front of the room. There were two lecterns on the dais, one for the consul and one for the inquisitor, and behind the lecterns, two windows, massive rectangles, looked out over Alicante. Clary moved to sit with the Lightwoods and her mother, while Robert Lightwood broke away from them and headed down the center aisle to take up the place of the inquisitor. On the dais, behind the lecterns, were four tall chairs, the back of each inscribed with a symbol: spellbook, moon, arrow, star. The seats for the downworlders of the council. Luke eyed his but seated himself next to Jocelyn. This was not a full council meeting with downworlder attendance. Luke wasn't here in an official capacity. In front of the seats a table had been erected, draped with blue velvet. Atop the velvet lay something long and sharp, something that glimmered in the light from the windows. The mortal sword. Clary glanced around. The flood of shadow hunters had slowed to a trickle. The room was nearly filled to its echoing roof. There had once been more entrances through the guard. Westminster Abbey had had one, she knew, as had the Sagrada Familia and St. Basil the Blessed, but they had been sealed when portals were invented. She couldn't help but wonder if some kind of magic kept the council room from overflowing. It was as full as she'd ever seen it, but there were still empty seats when Gia Penhallow stepped up onto the stage and clapped her hands sharply. "Will the council please come to attention?" she said. Silence fell quickly. Many of the shadow hunters were straining forward. Rumors had been flying around like panicked birds, and there was an electricity in the room, the crackling current of people desperate for information. "Bangkok, Buenos Aires, Oslo, Berlin, Moscow, Los Angeles," said Gia. Attacked in quick succession before the attacks could be reported. Before warnings could be given, every conclave in these cities has had its shadow hunters captured and turned. A few, pitifully few, the very old or very young, were simply killed, their bodies left for us to burn to add to the voices of lost shadow hunters in the silent city. A voice spoke from one of the front rows, a woman with black hair, the tattooed silver design of a koi fish, standing out on the dark skin of her cheek.
Clary rarely saw shadowhunters with tattoos that weren't marks, but it wasn't unheard of.
You say turned, she said, but do you not mean slain?
Gia's mouth tightened.
I do not mean slain, she said. I mean turned. We speak of the Andarkan, the ones Jonathan Morgenstern, or as he prefers to be known, Sebastian, turn from their purpose as Nephilim using the Infernal Cup. Every institute was issued reports of what happened at the Baron. The existence of the Andarkan is something we have known of now for some time, even if there were perhaps those who did not want to believe it. A murmur went around the room. Clary barely heard it. She was aware that Jace's hand was around hers, but she was hearing the wind on the Baron and seeing Shadowhunters rising from the Infernal Cup to face Sebastian, the marks of the Grey Book already fading from their skin.
Shadowhunters don't fight Shadowhunters, said an older man in one of the front rows. Jace murmured into his ear that he was the head of the Reykjavik Institute. It is blasphemy.
It is blasphemy, Gia agreed. Blasphemy is Sebastian Morgenstern's creed. His father wanted to cleanse the world of downworlders. Sebastian wants something very different. He wants Nephilim reduced to ashes, and he wants to use Nephilim to do it.
Surely if he was able to turn Nephilim into monsters, we ought to be able to find a way to turn them back, said Nazreen Chowdhury, the head of the Mumbai Institute, regal in her rune-decorated white sari. Surely we should not give up so easily on our own.
The body of one of the Andarkand was found at the Berlin site, said Robert. He was injured, probably left for dead. The Silent Brothers are examining him right now to see if they can glean any information that might lead to a cure.
Which Andarkand? Demanded the woman with the koi tattoo.
He had a name before he was turned, a Shadowhunter name.
Amalric Kriegsmesser, said Robert after a moment's hesitation. His family has already been told.
The warlocks of the Spiral Labyrinth are also working on a cure.
The whispered, omnidirectional voice of a Silent Brother echoed in the room. Clary recognized Brother Zachariah standing with his hands folded near the dais. Beside him was Helen Blackthorne, dressed in white mourning clothes, looking anxious.
They're warlocks, said someone else in a dismissive tone. Surely they won't do any better than our own Silent Brothers.
Can't Kriegsmesser be interrogated? Interrupted a tall woman with white hair.
Perhaps he knows Sebastian's next move, or even a manner of curing his condition.
Amalric Kriegsmesser is barely conscious, and besides, he is a servant of the Infernal Cup, said Brother Zachariah.
The Infernal Cup controls him completely. He has no will of his own, and therefore no will to break.
The woman with the koi tattoo spoke out again. Is it true that Sebastian Morgenstern is invulnerable now, that he can't be killed?
There was a murmur in the room. Gia spoke, raising her voice.
As I said, there were no Nephilim survivors from the first of the attacks, but the last attack was on the Institute in Los Angeles, and six survived, six children.
She turned.
Helen Blackthorne, if you please, bring the witnesses out.
Clary saw Helen nod and disappear through a side door. A moment later, she returned. She was walking slowly now and carefully, a hand on the back of a thin boy with a mop of wavy brown hair. He couldn't have been older than 12.
Clary recognized him immediately. She had seen him in the nave of the Institute the first time she had met Helen, his wrist clamped in his older sister's grip, his hands covered in wax where he had been playing with the tapers that decorated the interior of the cathedral. He had had an impish grin and the same blue-green eyes as his sister.
Julian, Helen had called him, her little brother.
The impish grin was gone now. He looked tired and dirty and frightened. Skinny wrists stuck out of the cuffs of a white morning jacket, the sleeves of which were too short for him. In his arms he was carrying a little boy, probably not more than 3 years old, with tangled brown curls. It seemed to be a family trait. The rest of the children wore similar borrowed morning clothes. Following Julian was a girl of about 10, her hand firmly clasped in the hold of a boy the same age. The girl's hair was dark brown, but the boy had tangled black curls that nearly obscured his face. Fraternal twins, Clary guessed. After them came a girl who might have been 8 or 9, her face round and very pale between brown braids. All of the Blackthorns, for the family resemblance was striking, looked bewildered and terrified, except perhaps Helen, whose expression was a mixture of fury and grief. The misery on their faces cut at Clary's heart. She thought of her power with runes, wishing that she could create one that would soften the blow of loss. Mourning runes existed, but only to honor the dead, in the same way that love runes existed, like wedding rings, to symbolize the bond of love. You couldn't make someone love you with a rune, and you couldn't assuage grief with it either. So much magic, Clary thought, and nothing to mend a broken heart.
Julian Blackthorn, said Gia Penhallow, and her voice was gentle. Step forward, please.
Julian swallowed and nodded, handing the little boy he was holding to his older sister. He stepped forward, his eyes darting around the dais. He was clearly scouring the space for someone. His shoulders had just begun to slump when another figure darted out onto the stage, a girl, also about 12, with a tangle of dark blonde hair that hung down around her shoulders. She wore jeans and a t-shirt that didn't quite fit, and her head was down, as if she couldn't bear so many people looking at her. It was clear that she didn't want to be there, on the stage or perhaps even in Idris, but the moment he saw her, Julian seemed to relax. The terrified look vanished from his expression as she moved to stand beside Helen, her face tucked down and away from the crowd.
Julian, said Gia in the same gentle voice, would you do something for us? Would you take up the mortal sword?
Clary sat up straight. She had held the mortal sword. She had felt the weight of it. The cold, like hooks in your skin, dragged the truth out of you. You couldn't lie holding the mortal sword, but the truth, even a truth you wanted to tell, was agony.
They can't, she whispered. He's just a kid.
He's the oldest of the children who escaped the Los Angeles Institute, Jay said under his breath. They don't have a choice. Julian nodded, his thin shoulders straight.
I'll take it.
Robert Lightwood passed behind the lectern then and went to the table. He took up the sword and returned to stand in front of Julian. The contrast between them was almost funny. The big, barrel-chested man and the lanky, wild-haired boy. Julian reached a hand up and took the sword. As his fingers closed around the hilt, he shuddered, a ripple of pain that was quickly forced down. The blonde girl behind him started forward, and Clary caught a glimpse of the look on her face, pure fury, before Helen caught at her and pulled her back. Gia knelt down. It was a strange sight, the boy with the sword bracketed on one side by the consul, her robe spreading out about her, and on the other by the inquisitor.
Julian, Gia said,
and though her voice was low, it carried throughout the council room. Can you tell us who is on the stage here with you today? In his clear boy's voice, Julian said,
You, the Inquisitor, my family, my sister Helen, and Tiberius, and Livia, and Drusilla, and Tavi, Octavian, and my best friend, Emma Carstairs.
And they were all with you when the Institute was attacked? Julian shook his head.
Not Helen, he said. She was here.
Can you tell us what you saw, Julian? Without leaving anything out. Julian swallowed. He was pale. Clary could imagine the pain he was feeling, the weight of the sword.
It was in the afternoon, he said. We were practicing in the training room. Katerina was teaching us, Mark was watching. Emma's parents were on a routine patrol at the beach. We saw a flash of light. I thought it was lightning or fireworks, but it wasn't.
Katerina and Mark left us and went downstairs. They told us to stay in the training room.
But you didn't, Gia said.
We could hear the sounds of fighting. We split up. Emma went to get Drusilla and Octavian, and I went to the office with Livia and Tiberius to call the Clave. We had to sneak by the main entrance to get there. When we did, I saw him.
Him?
I knew he was a shadow hunter, but not. He was wearing a red cloak covered in runes.
What runes?
I didn't know them, but there was something wrong with them. Not like the gray book runes. They gave me a sort of sick feeling to look at. And he pushed his hood back. He had white hair, so I thought he was old at first. Then I realized it was Sebastian Morgenstern. He was holding a sword.
Can you describe the sword?
silver with a pattern of black stars on the blade and the handle. He took it out and he... Julian's breath skittered and Clary could almost feel it. Feel his horror at the recollection warring with the compulsion to tell it, to relive it. She was leaning forward, her hands in fists, hardly aware that her nails were digging into her palms. "He held it to my father's throat," Julian went on. "There were others with Sebastian. They were wearing red, too."
"Shadow hunters?" Gia said.
"I don't know." Julian's breath was coming short. "Some wore black cloaks, others wore gear, but their gear was red. I've never seen red gear. There was a woman with brown hair, and she was holding a cup that looked like the mortal cup. She made my father drink out of it. He fell down and screamed. I could hear my brother screaming, too."
"Which brother?" asked Robert Lightwood.
"Mark," said Julian. "I saw them start to move into the entryway, and Mark turned around and shouted for us to run upstairs and get out. I fell on the top step, and when I looked down, they were swarming all over him." Julian made a gagging sound. "And my father, he was standing up and his eyes were black too, and he started moving toward Mark like the rest of them, like he didn't even know him." Julian's voice cracked, just as the blonde girl wrenched herself free of Helen's grasp and hurtled forward, throwing herself between Julian and the consul.
"Emma,"
Helen said, stepping forward, but Gia held out a hand to keep her back. Emma was white-faced and gasping. Clary thought that she had never seen so much anger contained in such a small form.
"Leave him alone,"
Emma shouted, throwing her arms out wide as if she could shield Julian behind her, though she was a head shorter.
"You're torturing him. Leave him alone."
"It's okay, Emma," Julian said, though the color was starting to come back into his face now that they were no longer questioning him.
"They have to do it."
She turned on him.
"No, they don't. I was there too. I saw what happened. Do it to me."
She held out her hands, as if begging for the sword to be put into them.
"I'm the one who stabbed Sebastian in the heart. I'm the one who saw him not die. You should be asking me."
"No," Julian began, and then Gia said, still gently, "Emma, we will question you next. The sword is painful, but not harmful."
"Stop it," Emma said. "Just stop it."
And she walked over to Julian, who was holding the sword tightly. It was clear he had no intention of trying to hand it over. He was shaking his head at Emma, even as she laid her hands over his so that both of them were holding the sword together.
"I stabbed Sebastian," Emma said in a voice that rang out through the room. "And he pulled the dagger out and laughed. He said, 'It's a shame you won't live. Live to tell the Clave that Lilith has strengthened me beyond all measure. Perhaps glorious could end my life. A pity for the Nephilim, that they have no more favors they can ask of heaven, and none of the puny instruments of war they forge in their adamant citadel can harm me now.'"
Clary shuddered. She heard Sebastian through Emma's words and could almost see him standing in front of her. Chatter had burst out among the Clave, drowning what Jace said to her next.
"Are you sure you didn't miss the heart?" Robert demanded, his dark eyebrows drawn together.
It was Julian who answered.
"Emma doesn't miss," he said, sounding as offended as if they had just insulted him. "I know where the heart is,"
Emma said, stepping back from Julian and casting a look of anger, more than anger, hurt, at the consul and the Inquisitor.
"But I don't think you do."
Her voice rose and she spun and ran off the dais, practically elbowing her way past Robert. She disappeared through the door from which she had come, and Clary heard her own breath rush out through her teeth. Wasn't anyone going to go after her? Julian clearly wanted to, but trapped between the consul and the Inquisitor, carrying the weight of the mortal sword, he couldn't move. Helen was looking after her with an expression of raw pain, her arms cradling the youngest boy, Tavi. And then Clary was on her feet. Her mother reached for her, but she was already running down the sloping aisle between the rows of seats. The aisle turned into wooden steps. Clary clattered up them, past the consul and Inquisitor, past Helen and through the side door after Emma. She nearly knocked over Aline, who was hovering near the open door, watching what was going on in the council room and scowling. The scowl disappeared when she saw Clary and was replaced by a look of surprise.
"What are you doing?"
"The little girl," Clary said breathlessly. "Emma, she ran back here."
"I know. I tried to stop her, but she pulled away from me. She's just...
Aline sighed and glanced at the council room where Gia had begun to question Julian again. It's been so hard on them, Helen and the others. You know their mother died only a few years ago. All they've got now is an uncle in London.
Does that mean they're gonna move the kids to London? You know when this is all over? Clary said.
Aline shook her head. Their uncle's been offered the leadership of the Los Angeles Institute. I think the hope is that he'll take over the job and raise the kids. I don't think he's agreed yet, though. He's probably in shock. I mean, he lost his nephew, his brother. Andrew Blackthorne isn't dead, but he might as well be. In a way, it's worse. Her voice was bitter.
I know, Clary said. I know exactly what that's like.
Aline looked at her more closely. I suppose you do, she said. It's just, Helen, I wish I could do more for her. She's eating herself up with guilt because she was here with me and not in Los Angeles when the Institute was attacked. And she's trying so hard, but she can't be a mom to all those kids, and their uncle hasn't gotten here yet, and there's Emma, Angel, help her. She doesn't even have a scrap of family left. I'd like to talk to her, to Emma.
Aline tucked a lock of hair behind her ear, the Blackthorn ring shimmering on her right hand. She won't talk to anyone but Julian.
Let me try, Clary urged. Please.
Aline looked at the determined expression on Clary's face and sighed. Down the hall, the first room on the left. The hall curved away from the council room. Clary could hear the voices of the shadow hunters fading as she walked. The walls were smooth stone, lined with tapestries that depicted various glorious scenes from Shadowhunter history. The first door that appeared on her left was wooden, very plain. It was partly ajar, but she rapped quickly before opening it, so as not to surprise whoever was inside. It was a simple room, with wooden wainscoting and a jumble of chairs hastily assembled. It felt to Clary like a hospital waiting room. It had that heavy sense in the air, of an impermanent place where people spent their anxiety and grief in unfamiliar surroundings. In the corner of the room was a chair propped against a wall, and in the chair was Emma. She looked smaller than she had from a distance. She was only wearing a short-sleeved t-shirt, and on her bare arms were marks, the voyant's rune on her left hand, so she was left-handed like Jace, which lay on the hilt of an unsheathed short sword lying across her lap. Up close, Clary could see that her hair was a pale blonde, but tangled and dirty enough that it had looked darker. From between the tangles, the girl glared up at Clary defiantly.
What? She said. What do you want?
Nothing, Clary said, pushing the door shut behind her. Just to talk to you.
Emma's eyes narrowed in suspicion.
You want to use the mortal sword on me? Interrogate me?
No, I've had it used on me and it's awful. I'm sorry they're using it on your friend. I think they should find another way.
I think they should trust him, said Emma. Julian doesn't lie.
She looked at Clary challengingly, as if daring her to disagree.
Of course he doesn't, Clary said and took a step into the room. She felt as if she were trying not to frighten off some kind of wild creature in the forest.
Julian's your best friend, isn't he?
Emma nodded.
My best friend is a boy, too. His name is Simon.
So where is he?
Emma's eyes flicked behind Clary as if she expected Simon to materialize suddenly.
He's in New York, said Clary. I miss him a lot.
Emma looked as if this made enormous sense.
Julian went to New York once, she said. I missed him, so when he got back, I made him promise he wouldn't go anywhere without me again.
Clary smiled and moved closer to Emma.
Your sword is beautiful, she said, pointing at the blade across the girl's lap.
Emma's expression softened fractionally. She touched the blade, which was etched with a delicate pattern of leaves and runes. The crossbar was gold, and across the blade were carved words. I am Cortana, of the same steel and temper as Joyeuse and Durandal. It was my father's. It's been passed down through the Carstairs family. It's a famous sword, she added proudly. It was made a long time ago.
Of the same steel and temper as Joyeuse and Durandal, said Clary.
Those are both famous swords. You know who owns famous swords?
Who?
Heroes, Clary said, kneeling down on the ground so she could look up into the girl's face.
Emma scowled.
I'm not a hero, she said. I didn't do anything to save Julian's father or Mark.
I'm so sorry, said Clary. I know how it is to watch someone you care about go dark, get turned into someone else.
But Emma was shaking her head.
Mark didn't go dark. He got taken away.
Clary frowned.
Taken away?
They didn't want him to drink from the cup because of his fairy blood, said Emma, and Clary recalled Alex saying that there was a fairy ancestor in the Blackthorn family tree. As if anticipating Clary's next question, Emma said wearily,
Only Mark and Helen have fairy blood. They had the same mother, but she left them with Mr. Blackthorn when they were small. Julian and the others had a different mom.
Oh, Clary said, not wanting to press too hard, not wanting this damaged girl to think that she was just another adult who saw Emma as a source of answers for her questions and nothing else.
I know Helen. Does Mark look like her?
Yeah, Helen and Mark have pointy ears a little, and light hair. None of the rest of the Blackthorns are blonde. They all have brown hair except Ty, and no one knows why he has black hair. Livy doesn't have it, and she's his twin.
A little color and animation had come back into Emma's face. It was clear she liked to talk about the Blackthorns.
So they didn't want Mark to drink from the cup, said Clary.
Privately, she was surprised that Sebastian would care one way or the other.
He'd never had Valentine's obsession with Downworlders, though it wasn't as if he liked them.
Maybe it doesn't work if you have Downworlder blood.
Maybe, said Emma.
Clary reached out and put her hand over one of Emma's. She dreaded the answer, but couldn't keep herself from asking the question.
He didn't turn your parents, did he?
No, no, Emma said, and now her voice was shaking.
They're dead. They weren't at the Institute. They were investigating a report of demon activity. Their bodies washed up on the beach after the attack. I could have gone with them, but I wanted to stay back at the Institute. I wanted to train with Jules. If I'd just gone with them...
If you had, you'd be dead too, said Clary.
How would you know?
Emma demanded, but there was something in her eyes, something that wanted to believe it.
I can see what a good shadow hunter you are, Clary said. I see your marks, I see your scars, and how you hold your sword. If you're that good, I can only imagine they were really good too. And something that could have killed them both isn't something you could have saved them from.
She touched the sword lightly.
Heroes aren't always the ones who win, she said. They're the ones who lose sometimes, but they keep fighting, they keep coming back, they don't give up. That's what makes them heroes.
Emma drew in a shaky breath, just as a rapping noise sounded at the door. Clary half turned as it opened, letting in light from the hall outside, and Jace. He caught her eye and smiled, leaning in the doorway. His hair was very dark gold, his eyes a shade lighter. Clary sometimes thought she could see the fire inside him, lighting his eyes and skin and veins moving just under the surface.
Clary, he said.
Clary thought she heard a small squeak from behind her. Emma was clutching her sword, looking between Clary and Jace with very large eyes.
The council's over, he said, and I don't think Gia's any too pleased you came running back here.
So I'm in trouble, Clary said.
As usual. Jace said, but his smile took any sting out of it. We're all leaving. Are you ready to go?
She shook her head.
I'll meet you at your house. You guys can fill me in on what happened at the council then.
He hesitated.
Get Aline or Helen to come with you, he said finally. The consul's house is just down the street from the Inquisitors.
He zipped his jacket up and slipped out of the room, closing the door behind him.
Clary turned back to Emma, who was still staring at her.
You know Jace Lightwood? Said Emma.
What?
He's famous, Emma said with obvious amazement. He's the best shadow hunter, the best.
He's my friend, Clary said, noting that the conversation had taken an unexpected turn.
Emma gave her a superior look.
He's your boyfriend.
How did you...
I saw the way he looked at you, said Emma.
And anyway, everyone knows that Jace Lightwood has a girlfriend and she's Clary Fairchild. Why didn't you tell me your name?
I guess I didn't think you'd know it, Clary said, reeling.
I'm not stupid, Emma said with an air of annoyance that had Clary straightening up quickly before she could laugh.
No, you're not. You're really smart, said Clary. And I'm glad you know who I am, because I want you to know you can come talk to me anytime.
Not just about what happened at the Institute, about whatever you want, and you can talk to Jace, too. Do you need to know where to find us?
Emma shook her head.
No, she said, her voice soft again. I know where the Inquisitor's house is.
Okay. Clary folded her hands, mostly to keep herself from reaching out and hugging the girl. She didn't think Emma would appreciate it. Clary turned towards the door.
If you're Jace Lightwood's girlfriend, you should have a better sword, Emma said suddenly, and Clary glanced down at the blade she'd strapped on that morning, an old one she'd packed with her belongings from New York.
She touched the hilt. This one isn't good? Emma shook her head.
Not good at all.
She sounded so serious that Clary smiled.
Thanks for the advice.
4. Darker than gold. When Clary knocked on the door of the Inquisitor's house, it was opened by Robert Lightwood. For a moment she froze, unsure what to say. She had never had a conversation with Jace's adoptive father, had never known him well at all. He had been a shadow in the background, usually behind Maris, with his hand on her chair. He was a big, dark-haired man with a neatly trimmed beard. She could not imagine him being friends with her own father, though she knew he had been in Valentine's circle. There were too many lines on his face, and there was too hard a set to his jaw for her to imagine him young. When he looked at her, she saw that his eyes were a very dark blue, so dark she had always thought they were black. His expression didn't change. She could feel disapproval radiating off him. She suspected Gia wasn't the only one annoyed that she'd run out of the council meeting after Emma.
If you're looking for my children, they're upstairs, was all he said. Top floor.
She passed by him, into the extremely grand front room. The house, the one officially designated to the Inquisitor and his or her family, was grand in its scope, with high ceilings and heavy, expensive-looking furniture. It was a large enough space to have interior archways, a massive grand staircase, and a chandelier that hung down from the ceiling, glowing with dim witch light. She wondered where Maris was, and if she liked the house.
Thanks, Clary said.
Robert Lightwood shrugged and disappeared into the shadows without another word. Clary took the stairs two at a time, passing several landings before she reached the top floor, which was up a flight of steep attic stairs that led to a corridor. A door down the hall was half open. She could hear voices from the other side. With a perfunctory knock, she stepped inside. The walls of the attic room were painted white, and there was a massive armoire in the corner, both doors flung open. Alec's clothes, practical and a little shabby, hanging on one side, and Jace's crisp in blacks and greys on the other. Their gear was neatly folded along the bottom. Clary almost smiled. She wasn't entirely sure why. There was something about Alec and Jace's sharing a room that she found endearing. She wondered if they kept each other up at night talking, the way she and Simon always had. Alec and Isabel were perched on the sill of the window. Behind them, Clary could see the colours of the sunset sparking off the water of the canal below. Jace was sprawled on one of the single beds, his boots rather defiantly planted on the velvet coverlet. I think they mean they can't just wait around for Sebastian to attack more institutes, Alec was saying. That would be hiding. Shadow hunters don't hide. Jace rubbed his cheek against his shoulder. He looked tired, his pale hair rumpled.
Feels like hiding, he said. Sebastian's out there. We're in here, double warded, all the institutes emptied out, no one to protect the world from demons. Who will watch the watchers?
Alec sighed and rubbed a hand over his face.
Hopefully it won't be for long.
Hard to imagine what would happen, Isabel said. A world with no shadow hunters, demons everywhere, downworlders attacking one another.
If I were Sebastian, Jay started.
But you're not Sebastian, Clary said. They all looked over at her. Alec and Jace looked absolutely nothing alike, Clary thought, but every once in a while there was a similarity in the way that they glanced or gestured that reminded her that they'd been raised together. They both looked curious, a little concerned. Isabel seemed more tired and upset.
You all right? Jace said by way of greeting, giving her a lopsided smile. How's Emma?
Wrecked, Clary said.
What happened after I left the meeting?
The interrogation was mostly over, said Jace. Sebastian's obviously behind the attacks, and he has a sizable force of Andarkan warriors backing him up. Nobody knows exactly how many, but we have to assume that all of the missing have been turned.
Still, we have greater numbers by far, said Alec. He has his original forces, and the 6 conclaves he turned, we have everyone else.
There was something in Jace's eyes that turned them darker than gold.
Sebastian knows that, he murmured. He'll know his forces down to the last warrior. He'll know exactly what he can match and what he can't.
We have the Downworlders on our side, said Alec. That's the whole point of tomorrow's meeting, isn't it? Talk to the representatives, strengthen our alliances. Now we know what Sebastian's doing, we can strategize around it. Hit him with the Knight's children, the courts, the warlocks.
Clary's eyes met Jace's in silent communication. Now that we know what Sebastian's doing, he'll do something else, something we don't expect yet.
And then everyone talked about Jace, said Isabel. So, you know, the usual.
About Jace? Clary leaned against the footboard of Jace's bed. What about him?
There was a lot of back and forth about whether Sebastian's basically invulnerable now, and if there are ways to wound and kill him. Glorious could have done it because of the heavenly fire, but currently, the only source of heavenly fire is...
Jace, Clary said grimly.
But the Silent Brothers have tried everything to separate Jace from the heavenly fire, and they can't do it. It's in his soul. So what's their plan, hitting Sebastian over the head with Jace until he passes out?
Brother Zachariah said pretty much the same thing, Jace said, maybe with less sarcasm.
Anyway, they wound up talking about ways to capture Sebastian without killing him. If they can destroy all the Andarkand, if he can be trapped somewhere or somehow, it might not matter as much if he can't be killed, Alec said.
Put him in an Adamus coffin and drop it into the sea, Isabel said. That's my suggestion.
Anyway, when they were done talking about me, which was of course the best part, Jace said, they went back pretty quickly to talking about ways to cure the Andarkand. They're paying the Spiral Labyrinth a fortune to try to unravel the spell Sebastian used to create the Infernal Cup and enact the ritual.
They need to stop obsessing about curing the Andarkand and start thinking about how to defeat them, Isabel said in a hard voice.
A lot of them know people who returned, Isabel, said Alec. Of course they want them back.
Well, I want my little brother back, said Isabel, her voice rising. Don't they understand what Sebastian did? He killed them. He killed what was human about them, and he left demons walking around in skin suits that looked like people we used to know. That's all.
Keep it down, Alec said in his determined older brother tone. You know Mum and Dad are in the house, right? They'll come up.
Oh, they're here, said Isabel. About as far away from each other bedroom-wise as you can possibly be, but they're here.
It's not our business where they sleep, Isabel.
They're our parents.
But they have their own lives, said Alec, and we have to respect that and stay out of it.
His expression darkened.
A lot of people split up when they have a child who dies.
Isabel gave a little gasp.
Izzy?
Alec seemed to realize he'd gone too far.
Mentions of Mac seemed to devastate Isabel more than they did any of the other Lightwoods, even Maris.
Isabel turned and ran out of the room, slamming the door behind her.
Alec shoved his fingers into his hair, causing it to stick up like duck fluff.
God damn it, he swore, and then flushed. Alec hardly ever swore, and usually when he did, he muttered.
He shot Jace an almost apologetic look and went after his sister.
Jace sighed, swung his long legs off the bed, and stood up. He stretched like a cat, cracking his shoulders.
Guess that's my cue to walk you home.
I can find my way back.
He shook his head, grabbing his jacket off the bedpost. There was something impatient about his movements, something prowling and watchful that made Clary's own skin prickle.
I want to get out of here anyway. Come on, let's go.
It's been an hour. At least an hour, I swear, Maya said. She was lying on the couch in Jordan and Simon's apartment, her bare feet in Jordan's lap. Shouldn't have ordered Ty, Simon said absently. He was sitting on the floor, fiddling with the Xbox controller. It hadn't been working for several days. There was a Duraflame log in the fireplace. Like everything else in the apartment, the fireplace was poorly maintained, and half the time the room would fill with smoke when they used it. Jordan was always complaining of the cold, the cracks in the windows and walls, and the landlord's disinterest in fixing anything. They never come on time. Jordan grinned good-naturedly. What do you care? You don't eat. I can drink now, Simon pointed out. It was true. He'd trained his stomach to accept most liquids. Milk, coffee, tea. Those solid foods still made him rich. He doubted the drinks did anything much for him in the way of nutrition. Only blood seemed to do that. But it made him feel more human to be able to consume something in public that wouldn't send everyone screaming. With a sigh, he dropped the controller. I think this thing is broken. Permanently. Which is great, because I have no money to replace it. Jordan looked at him curiously. Simon had brought all his savings from home when he'd moved in, but that hadn't been much. Fortunately, he also had few expenses. The apartment was on loan from the Praetor Lupus, who also provided Simon's blood. I've got money, Jordan said. We'll be fine. That's your money, not mine. You're not going to be watching me forever, Simon said, staring into the blue flames of the fireplace. And then what? I'd be applying for college soon if... Everything hadn't happened. Music school. I could learn, get a job. No one's going to employ me now. I look 16. I always will. Hmm, Maya said. I guess vampires don't really have jobs, do they? I mean, some werewolves do. Bat's a DJ, and Luke owns that bookstore. But vampires are all in clans. There aren't really vampire scientists. Or vampire musicians, said Simon. Let's face it. My career is now professional vampire. I'm actually kind of surprised the vampires haven't been rampaging through the streets, eating tourists, what with Maureen leading them, said Maya. She's pretty bloodthirsty. Simon made a face. I assume some of the clan are trying to control her. Raphael, probably. Lily, she's one of the smartest of the vampire clan. Knows everything. She and Raphael were always thick as thieves. But I don't exactly have vampire friends. Considering what a target I am, sometimes I'm surprised I have any friends. He heard the bitterness in his own voice and glanced across the room at the pictures Jordan had tacked up on the wall. Pictures of himself with his friends, at the beach, with Maya. Simon had thought of putting up his own photos. Though he hadn't taken any from his house, Clary had some. He could have borrowed them, made the apartment more his own. But though he liked living with Jordan and felt comfortable there, it wasn't home. It didn't feel permanent, as if he could make a life there. I don't even have a bed, he said out loud. Maya turned her head toward him. Simon, what is this about? Is it because Isabel left? Simon shrugged. I don't know. I mean, yes, I miss Izzy, but... Clary says the two of us need to DTR. Oh, define the relationship, Maya said at Jordan's puzzled look. You know, when you decide if you're actually girlfriend and boyfriend. Which you should do, by the way. Why does everyone know this acronym but me? Simon wondered aloud. Does Isabel want to be my girlfriend? Can't tell you, said Maya. Girl code. Ask her. She's an Idris. Ask her when she gets back. Simon was silent, and Maya added more gently. She'll come back. And Clary, too. It's just a meeting. I don't know. The institutes aren't safe. Neither are you, said Jordan. That's why you have me. Maya looked at Jordan. There was something odd in the look, something Simon couldn't quite identify. There had been something off between Maya and Jordan for some time now, a distance from Maya, a question in her eyes when she looked at her boyfriend. Simon had been waiting for Jordan to say something to him, but Jordan hadn't. Simon wondered if Jordan had noticed Maya's distance. It was obvious. Or if he was stubbornly in denial. Would you still be a daylighter? Maya asked, turning her attention to Simon. If you could change it? I don't know. Simon had asked himself the same question, then pushed it away. There was no point obsessing over things you couldn't change. Being a daylighter meant that you had gold in your veins. Other vampires wanted it. For if they drank your blood, they too could walk in the sun. But just as many wanted you destroyed, for it was the belief of most vampires that daylighters were an abomination to be rooted out. He remembered Raphael's words to him on the roof of a Manhattan hotel. You had better pray, daylighter, that you do not lose that mark before the war comes. For if you do, there will be a line of enemies waiting their turn to kill you, and I will be at the head of it. And yet. I would miss the sun, he said. It keeps me human, I think. The light from the fire sparked off Jordan's eyes as he looked at Simon. Being human's overrated, he said with a smile. Maya swung her feet off his legs abruptly. Jordan looked over at her, worried, just as the doorbell rang. Simon was on his feet in a flash. Take out, he announced. I'll go get it. Besides, he added over his shoulder as he headed down the hall to the front door, no one's tried to kill me in 2 weeks. Maybe they got bored and gave up. He heard the murmur of voices behind him, but didn't listen. They were talking to each other. He reached for the knob and swung the door open, already fumbling for his wallet. And there was a throb against his chest. He glanced down to see Isabel's pendant flash bright scarlet and threw himself backward, just missing a hand thrust out to grab him. He yelled out loud. There was a looming figure dressed in red gear in the doorway, a shadowhunter man with ugly splashes of runes on both cheeks, a hawk-like nose, and a broad, pale forehead. He snarled at Simon and advanced. Simon, get down! Jordan shouted. And Simon threw himself flat and rolled to the side just as a crossbow bolt exploded along the hallway. The dark shadowhunter spun sideways with almost unbelievable speed. The bolt embedded itself in the door. Simon heard Jordan curse in frustration, and then Maya, in wolf form, sprang past him, leaping at the Undarkened. There was a satisfying howl of pain as her teeth sank into his throat. Blood sprayed out, filling the air with a salty red mist. Simon inhaled it, tasting the bitter tang of demon-tainted blood as he rose to his feet. He stepped forward just as the Undarkened seized hold of Maya and threw her down the hall, a thrashing, howling ball of teeth and claws. Jordan shouted. Simon was making a noise low in his own throat, a sort of vampire hiss, and he could feel his fanged teeth snap out. The Undarkened stepped forward, pouring blood, but still steady. Simon felt a pang of fear low in his gut. He had seen them fight at the Burren, Sebastian's soldiers, and he knew that they were stronger, faster, and harder to kill than Shadowhunters. He hadn't really thought about how much harder to kill they were than vampires. Get out of the way! Jordan grabbed Simon by the shoulders and half threw him after Maya, who had scrambled to her feet. There was blood on her ruff, and her wolf eyes were dark with rage. Get out, Simon. Let us deal with this. Get out! Simon stood his ground. I'm not going. He's here for me. I know that, Jordan shouted. I'm your Praetor Lupus guard. Now let me do my job. Jordan swung around, bringing up his crossbow again. This time, the bolt sank into the dark Shadowhunter's shoulder. He staggered back and let loose a string of curses in a language Simon didn't know. German, he thought. The Berlin Institute had been hit. Maya sprang past Simon, and she and Jordan closed in on the dark Shadowhunter. Jordan glanced back once at Simon, his hazel eyes fierce and wild. Simon nodded and darted back into the living room. He slammed open the window. It gave with a fierce shriek of swollen wood and an explosion of old paint chips, and climbed out onto the fire escape, where Jordan's wolfsbane plants, withered by winter air, crowded the metal ledge. Every part of him screamed that he shouldn't be leaving, but he had promised Isabel. Promised he would let Jordan do his work as bodyguard. Promised he wouldn't make himself a target. He clasped one hand around Izzy's pendant, warm under his fingers, as if it had lain recently against her throat, and headed down the metal steps. They were clanging and slippery with snow. He almost fell several times before he reached the last rung and dropped to the shadowy pavement below, and was immediately surrounded by vampires. Simon had time to recognize only two of them as part of the Hotel du Mort clan. Delicate, dark-haired Lily and blonde Zeke, both grinning like fiends, before something was thrown over his head. Fabric pulled tight around his throat, and he choked. Not because he needed air, but because of the pain of having his throat compressed. Maureen sends her regards, said Zeke into his ear. Simon opened his mouth to scream, but darkness claimed him before he could make a sound.
I didn't realize you were quite so famous,
said Clary as she and Jace made their way down the narrow pavement that ran alongside Old Way Canal. It was turning to evening. Darkness had only just fallen, and the streets were full of people hurrying to and fro, wrapped in thick cloaks, their faces cold and closed off. Stars were beginning to come out, a soft prickle of light across the eastern sky. They illuminated Jace's eyes as he looked over at Clary curiously.
Everyone knows Valentine's son.
I know, but when Emma saw you, she acted like you were her celebrity crush. Like you were on the cover of Shadowhunters Weekly every month.
You know, when they asked me to pose, they said it would be tasteful.
As long as you were holding a strategically placed Seraph blade, I don't see the problem, Clary said, and Jace laughed, a cut-off sound that indicated that she had surprised the amusement out of him. It was her favorite laugh of his. Jace was always so controlled. It was still a delight to be one of the few people who could get under his carefully constructed armor and surprise him.
You liked her, didn't you? Jace said.
Throne, Clary said.
Liked who?
They were passing through a square, she recalled, cobblestoned with a well in the center, covered now with a stone circle, probably to keep the water from freezing.
That girl, Emma.
There was something about her, Clary acknowledged.
The way she stood up for Helen's brother, maybe. Julian, she'd do anything for him. She really loves the Blackthorns, and she's lost everyone else.
She reminded you of you.
I don't think so, Clary said. I think maybe she reminded me of you.
Because I'm tiny blonde and look good in pigtails?
Clary bumped him with her shoulder. They had reached the top of a street lined with stores. The stores were closed now, though witch-light glowed through the barred windows. Clary had the sense of being in a dream or fairy tale, a sense that Alicante never failed to give her. The vast sky overhead, the ancient buildings carved with scenes out of legends, and over everything, the clear demon towers that gave Alicante its common name, the City of Glass.
Because she lost her blood family, she said as they passed a store with loaves of bread stacked in the window.
But she has the Blackthorns. She doesn't have anyone else. No aunts or uncles, no one to take her in, but the Blackthorns will.
So she'll have to learn what you did. That family isn't blood, it's the people who love you. The people who have your back like the Lightwoods did for you.
Jace had stopped walking. Clary turned around to look at him. The crowd of pedestrians parted around them. He was standing in front of the entrance to a narrow alley by a shop. The wind that blew up the street ruffled his blonde hair and his unzipped jacket. She could see the pulse in his throat.
Come here, he said, and his voice was rough.
Clary took a step toward him, a little warily.
Had she said something that had upset him?
Though Jace was rarely angry at her, and when he was straightforward about it. He reached out, took her hand gently, and led her after him as he ducked around the corner of the building and into the shadows of a narrow passage that wound towards a canal in the distance. There was no one else in the passageway with them, and its narrow entrance blocked the view from the street. Jace's face was all angles in the dimness, sharp cheekbones, soft mouth, the golden eyes of a lion.
I love you, he said. I don't say it often enough, I love you.
She leaned back against the wall. The stone was cold. Under other circumstances it might have been uncomfortable, but she didn't care at that moment. She pulled him toward her carefully until their bodies were lined up, not quite touching, but so close that she could feel the heat radiating off him. Of course he didn't need to zip his jacket, not with the fire burning through his veins. The scent of black pepper and soap and cold air clung around him as she pressed her face into his shoulder and breathed him in.
Clary, he said.
His voice was a whisper and a warning. She could hear the roughness of longing in it, longing for the physical reassurance of closeness, of any touch at all. Carefully, he reached around her to place the palms of his hands against the stone wall, caging her into the space made by his arms. She felt his breath in her hair, the light brush of his body against hers. Every inch of her seemed supersensitized. Everywhere he touched, she felt as if tiny needles of pleasure pain were being dragged across her skin.
Please don't tell me you pull me into an alley and you're touching me and you don't plan on kissing me, because I don't think I could take it, she said in a low voice.
He closed his eyes. She could see his dark lashes feathering against his cheeks, remembered the feel of mapping the shape of his face under her fingers, of the full weight of his body on hers, the way his skin felt against her skin.
I don't.
He said,
and she could hear the dark roughness under the usual smooth glide of his voice. Honey over needles. They were close enough together that when he breathed in, she could feel the expansion of his chest. We can't. She put her hand against